Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 7th, 2010. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service denies Montana wolf hunt proposal. University of Idaho, LCSE, and North Idaho College proposed $21 million building in Coeur d'Alene, and candidates differ on wolves and local option taxes at League of Women Voters Candidates Forum in Moscow. We'll have details on all those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
France has issued its most extreme warning in recent years about the dangers of visiting Britain.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has denied a request from the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to allow the hunting of 186 wolves. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Deputy Director Danielle Ash wrote to Montana officials that the agency supports the sport hunting of wolves, but he did not believe Montana's proposed conservation hunt would survive a legal challenge in light of federal Judge Donald Malloy's decision this summer to return wolves to the endangered species list in the Northern Rockies. Meanwhile, Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter was planning an attempt to reach a wolf management agreement with federal officials today in order to meet a self-imposed deadline on the issue. After Judge Malloy's decision this summer, Otter notified the Fish and Wildlife Service that by today he wanted a new wolf management agreement that would spell out the relationship between the service and Idaho Fish and Game. Although U.S. Fish and Wildlife has jurisdiction over wolf decisions, agents of the Idaho Fish and Game Department implement the decisions on the ground. Today's meeting in Boise was to be attended by representatives from the Department of Fish and Game and the Office of Species Conservation, both state agencies. The Coeur d'Alene Press reports the University of Idaho, Lewis Clark State College, and North Idaho College have planned to present their joint proposal for a $21 million shared facility in Coeur d'Alene to the State Permanent Building Fund Advisory Council this week. LCSC Interim President J. Anthony Fernandez says the three colleges have agreed to make the building their top building priority. Fernandez says presidents of the three colleges say they hope the collaborative effort will make the project more attractive to lawmakers. He told the Coeur d'Alene Press editorial board, "The days are gone when you think you can be a little isolated school anywhere in the country and meet students' needs. There needs to be different ways of offering programs to students more efficiently so they can get the degree they desire." Fernandez hopes the new building will give LCSC a sense of home in Coeur d'Alene. The school has 429 students at its Coeur d'Alene branch, which is up 8.3% over last year. Fernandez said, "If we had a permanent facility, I believe we could approach 1,000 students. Right now, we're cramped, we're good renters, and we're living out of our suitcases." No money has yet been set aside for the building, and Fernandez thinks it will take a few years to get state approval for the project. The Federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today upheld Washington's law that requires released convicted felons to go through a process to get their voting rights restored before they can vote. A prisoner rights group had sued in an attempt to allow prisoners and parolees to automatically have the right to vote. Attorneys argued that since the justice system is discriminatory against minorities, and the percentage of minorities among the prison population is higher than in the general population, the rule should be thrown out. The court agreed that Washington's justice system is discriminatory, but found no evidence that the Washington law was enacted with the intent of disenfranchising minorities. The Washington Supreme Court has determined the exceptionally long sentence given to a man who stabbed another in the neck, leaving him paralyzed below the chest for life, is inappropriate. The court sent the case of stabber Troy Dean Stubbs back to the Ponderay County Superior Court for resentencing. Stubbs was sentenced to 38 years in prison for stabbing Ryan E. Goodwin at a birthday celebration in Cusick in 2005. The standard sentence for an assault that causes great bodily harm under Washington law is between 13.5 and 20 years in prison. A jury called the attack particularly egregious. The state Supreme Court's ruling reads in part, although the injuries Goodwin suffered were significant, we conclude that under the statutory regime, no injury can substantially exceed the level of bodily harm necessary to satisfy the element of great bodily harm. Idaho's largest corporation, Micron Technologies of Boise, has reported a $1.9 billion profit for fiscal year 2010, which exactly reverses the company's $1.9 billion loss in fiscal year 2009. Company chair Steve Appleton says the company has emerged from tough economic times with one of the strongest balance sheets and business portfolios in the history of the microchip manufacturing industry. Micron's sales for the last fiscal year totaled $8.5 billion, which is double the amount in fiscal year 2009. Although job figures statewide are still in a slump, locally things are looking up. Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories unveiled plans for a Lewiston facility that will employ 90 people yesterday and a Pullman expansion that will create 150 new jobs. Also in Lewiston, the Planning and Zoning Commission gave the nod to a trailer building factory, which will create 10 new jobs. According to figures gathered statewide in April and May, the state's job vacancy rate remains low, and only one out of five new hires are linked to economic growth. The Idaho Job Vacancy Survey report posts an overall job vacancy rate of 1.8%, somewhat higher than that of Oregon, but less than Washington's. The greatest concentration of job vacancies are in north central and eastern Idaho. The Idaho state budget and state government's ability to pay for things such as education and health services during the recession was the biggest issue for legislative candidates at last night's League of Women Voters Candidates Forum at the Moscow High School. The differences between the District 6 legislative candidates were most apparent on a question about the possibility of the state allowing more local taxing authority. Here's Republican House candidate Ike Young, followed by his opponent, Democratic incumbent Shirley Ringo.
Any tax increases like that would be a negative impact on business. People are struggling already. The more money that we can keep in their back pockets, the more economic stimulation will really occur.
In a way, I look at our school overrides as a type of local option tax. And we saw, for example, this year when the state cut funding on education, five out of six school districts in Latah County had to run overrides and the people approved them because they wanted to do more than the state provided.
Representative Shirley Ringo, preceded by Republican challenger Ike Young. In the other House race, Democrat Judy Brown said she supports local option taxing authority, while Republican incumbent Tom Trail said he would support it with limits. Here's Judy Brown, followed by Tom Trail.
I think that if a community wants to provide itself services that are currently not being provided, they should certainly have the freedom to do that. Another consequence of underfunding of many state services by the state legislature is that it forces more and more of these responsibilities down to the local level.
I voted for supporting this constitutional amendment some time ago. It was very narrowly focused in terms that it would be sunset after 5 years, and it had to be for a very specific project, and it had to be carried by a 60% margin by the local voters.
That was Representative Tom Trail, preceded by his Democratic challenger, Judy Brown. In the Senate race, the difference between Democrat Dan Schmidt and Republican Grisham Bauma was the level of enthusiasm for the idea. Here's Schmidt, followed by Bauma.
Given that the state of Idaho is seeing significant disparities, lots of rural areas and then metropolitan area developing, there need to be options for local development that currently aren't available.
I haven't thought about the local option tax, but I think there probably always need to be safeguards surrounding the ability to make your neighbor kick up some more money for whatever you want, but if it had proper safeguards, I guess I don't have a problem with it.
That was Republican Grisham Bauma, preceded by Democrat Dan Schmidt, who are running for the District 6 Senate seat in the Idaho legislature. The two candidates differed on the wolf issue, with one calling for management and the other calling for extermination. Here's Democrat Dan Schmidt.
They're causing problems with other species that are game species, and the Idaho Fish and Game can do what they do best and manage them. My experience as a population biologist, all these species have ebbs and flows, and they go up and down. Human management of these is not perfect and will not be.
Schmidt's opponent, Republican Grisham Bauma, said the type of wolves transplanted to Idaho are a subspecies of Canadian wolves and not the native wolf that historically lived in Idaho.
We brought in a native Canadian wolf, which was adapted to an interior, much colder interior climate, which produces a bigger body mass. The animal is almost twice the size of the native, and it's likely to wipe out the remaining natives that we did have. I think that we have the right to manage this alien invasive species, and I think it should be eliminated because it's not native.
Republican Grisham Bauma speaking at last night's League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. Schmidt and Bauma are vying for the seat held by Republican Gary Schroeder, who Bauma defeated in the Republican primary in May. Last night, candidates for Latah County Commission were asked how they would work with the Moscow City Council to get trucks out of downtown Moscow. Here's the candidates in the District 3 race, starting with Independent Jerry Warner, followed by Republican Dave McGraw, and finally Democrat Robin Olgren.
This town needed a bypass. Those trucks don't stop downtown and buy things. I think I would work with both Moscow City Council and try to find a way to do it.
What you're referring to is the ring road. If we do a ring road around Moscow, what that's going to do is not only are trucks going to use it, but cars are going to use it too. Cars are going to go around Moscow instead of through Moscow. We need to direct traffic towards Moscow businesses, not away from Moscow businesses.
There may be a good option to have a trucking route that that can go around town that would still allow the regular vehicles to come through town. One of the things that Latah County has to do is come up with a long-range plan so that we know what we want 20 years, 40 years, 60 years down the road, how we want this county to look, and then start making some of these decisions.
That was Democratic County Commission candidate Robin Olgren, preceded by Republican Dave McGraw, and we started with Independent Jerry Warner. The three are running for the District 3 County Commission seat, being vacated by Republican Jack Nelson, who is retiring. By the way, all Latah County voters can vote in both County Commission races, regardless of the district the candidates reside in. Now we go to the District 2 candidate on the trucks in downtown Moscow issue. Here's Republican Bill Gosling, followed by incumbent Democrat Tom Stroshine.
There are three routes that are proposed for Highway 95 coming out of Thorn Creek. The western one seems to me to be the most sensible because the east central and the eastern one both continue to put traffic into downtown Moscow. The western one will come up and split somewhere in between Pullman and Moscow. Traffic wanting to go west to Pullman can do so, traffic wanting to come to Moscow can do so, and there is a proposed route to take it on up and to Viola, bypassing Steakhouse Hill.
I at one time thought a bypass would be a long-range solution. However, with the challenges we now have with the development of the corridor, and with no taxing structure in place that Idaho can reap any of the tax revenues from development in the corridor, I think right now it would be a mistake to look at a bypass that would go west. And certainly we heard from the people in the impact area, we're not ready for the farmers that live in that area for a bypass through the impact areas.
That was Latah County Commission candidate Tom Stroschein, who is the incumbent, preceded by Republican challenger Bill Gosling, speaking at last night's League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. The third county commissioner is Democrat Jennifer Barrett, who is not up for re-election this year. At last night's forum, the two candidates for Latah County Assessor were asked what they could bring to the office that their opponent cannot. We hear first from Republican Jerry Coleman, then from incumbent Democrat Patrick Vaughn.
I can bring 14 years of experience in appraisal work. Again, I've done all the appraisal work in our office, beginning with residential on up to agriculture and timber. I'm currently the commercial appraiser. Being able to do that appraisal work along with doing the assessor's job would make me a working assessor and that be able to save the taxpayer some dollars.
You're not voting for an appraiser. You're voting for the chief executive officer responsible for the assessment program and DMV operations in Latah County. So it's an $880,000 budget, $2.9 billion worth of value in Latah County, $29 million of increment in urban renewal area, increment tax financing that's important to the city of Moscow, 470 senior citizens and disabled people that receive circuit breaker property tax relief, over 400 charitable, educational, religious organizations are exempted from property taxes. What I bring is the leadership and management experience, the vision to see how things can be improved, the understanding to focus on customer service and listen to taxpayers.
That was Latah County Assessor Patrick Vaughn, preceded by Republican Jerry Coleman at last night's League of Women Voters Candidates Forum at the Moscow High School. The parties in the Hanford cleanup have asked a federal judge to approve an agreement that would define the timetable for the cleanup of underground storage tanks at the nuclear facility for the next four decades. The parties asked U.S. District Judge Fred Van Sickle of Spokane yesterday to approve a consent decree under the tri-party agreement drawn up by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Washington Department of Ecology. The decree will allow the courts to monitor the cleanup and ensure that it is completed. The agreement was made public a year ago and vetted in a comment process. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter announced on Tuesday that he will sign a temporary ban order for spice on Friday, October 15th. Spice is legal incense sprayed with compounds developed in a laboratory to mimic THC, which is the main ingredient in marijuana. The Idaho Pharmacy Board voted September 30th to recommend the state classify spice, which sells under the names K2, Genie, Ultra, Summit, Blonde, Yucatan Gold, Bombay Blue, Black Mamba, and others, as a Class 1 controlled substance, meaning it has no known medical value. The governor's order covers a number of chemical configurations of synthetic cannabinoids. Under Idaho law, once the pharmacy board recommends a ban, only the signature of the governor is needed to put a temporary ban into effect. When the legislature meets next year, it will have the opportunity to ban the substances permanently. A press release from the governor's office says Otter consulted with the pharmacy board and state office of drug policy and decided to wait until October 15th to sign the order to give retailers time to return the inventory or destroy it. The release quotes Governor Otter saying, "We also are asking law enforcement to help retailers before the ban on spice goes on the books by taking control of excess merchandise so it can be properly destroyed. The key here is working closely with everyone involved, from consumers and retailers to regulators and law enforcement, to ensure this is more than a gesture. We are concerned about the impact of spice on our citizens, and we want to address it by giving people the information and other tools they need to act responsibly." The press release says 13 other states have banned at least one of the compounds included in the Idaho ban, and that there have been 80 visits to emergency rooms around the state in a recent six-month period associated with the use of spice. Most retailers sell spice marked as not for human consumption, and although people smoke it to get a marijuana-like high, it is also used as incense and for aromatherapy. A retailer who operates the store Urban Aroma on Main Street in Moscow, who didn't want his name used on the radio, told KRFP last week he had taken his inventory out of the state and liquidated it in anticipation of the Idaho ban. He said he intends to reopen with new inventory soon. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Showers and possibly a thunderstorm, low around 46, 80% chance of precipitation tonight. 20% chance of showers tomorrow morning, otherwise partly sunny, high 63. Mostly cloudy Friday night, 47. 40% chance of rain on Saturday, cloudy, high 61. 40% chance of rain Saturday night, cloudy, low 52. And 90% chance of rain on Sunday, high 58. Currently 55 degrees and overcast at the Moscow Pullman Regional Airport. Coming up next is Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Remember, every edition of the KRFP Evening Report is available online at the Radio Free Moscow website and as a podcast. This is KRFP Moscow.